sometimes it just takes a little wake-up call, a little nudge, a little push in the right direction to help you understand, oh my gosh, I totally do that to my kiddo. I'm going to make a change.
Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us. We recently launched our very first online course, the Sensory Diet Crash Course. We walk you through how to identify sensory preferences, how to identify when a sensory diet will be beneficial, and we provide you with all the activity ideas to include. We also teach you how to sequence the sensory diet and give you strategies for success. You can find the link for the Sensory Diet Crash Course in the show notes of this episode.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 98 of the Sensory Project Show. This is Rachel.
And Jessica. Episode 98 means that episode 100 is just a couple of weeks away, and we have something super cool and exciting for our 100th episode.
We've talked about it before, and we've been working on this project for a while. If you follow us on social media, you've seen us tease it a little bit. But we feel like it's time to tell you guys so you can get excited with us.
We are going to do a 5-episode series on primitive reflexes. So these 5 episodes are going to launch Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, starting on June 8th.
And they're very, very short episodes. We wanted to keep them short and sweet. We're just giving you the basics on each of the 5 primitive reflexes that we see and we work with most frequently, just to give you guys more information about why we're so passionate about them and how they really do impact life in its fullest.
And then we are also going to be launching our new course, which will be our Primitive Reflex Crash Course. And we're super excited for it. It's going to be really amazing.
Yeah, we are excited for this course to launch. It's been a fun project to work on, and it's just more in-depth, more research and evidence and activities to share with you guys. So without further ado, let's talk about what we're going to talk about today.
Okay. So today we are talking about the idea that less is more. And the idea for this episode started when Rachel posted her $1 million therapy hack that she didn't learn in school on Instagram. And if you guys haven't seen that post yet, you need to go to her page, The Sensory Project 208. And check out that post so that you can understand what we're talking about. But the $1 million therapy hack that she didn't learn at school, that I didn't learn in school, that probably no therapist learned in school, I'm guessing, is
silence. Yes. So we are expanding on that topic and saying that less is more. Less verbiage, less verbal cues is more. Let's expand on that. Because so often, the kids that we work with require additional verbal cues to understand what we're saying to them, or what we're showing to them, or just what we want them or need them to do.
And the reason that our kiddos need extra cues can be for a variety of different reasons. It could be because they have challenges with praxis.
They could have challenges filtering auditory information within their environment.
They could have challenges with overall auditory processing and understanding what someone is saying to them.
They might have challenges with working memory and sequencing.
And then they might have challenges with focus and attention, both selective attention and divided attention. And if you're not familiar with those terms, basically it just means being able to focus on one thing at a time, one thing in a busy environment and not getting distracted, being able to focus on maybe more than one thing at a time.
Yeah, so you guys know, you're here, you're listening to our podcast, you know that our goal is to help these kiddos be successful in all of these areas in as many environments as they are typically in.
When our child is struggling to understand what we're saying, for whatever reason it is, sometimes we, the adult, end up providing too many verbal cues. You might find ourselves
repeating our instructions over and over. We might say their name over and over, trying to get their attention, and it's not successful.
Mm-hmm. So this can happen when the adults, whether your therapist, parent, teacher, whoever you are listening, you think that the child is not hearing you, not understanding you. Maybe you think that they're just being naughty and ignoring you, or they're just not listening.
And a quick note is that children don't go into situations trying to be bad or trying to be naughty, trying to not listen. Children inherently want to please those around them, but what'll happen, especially over time, is that they will learn to filter out certain information, or they will learn to avoid certain situations or certain cues because they don't feel successful in those situations. So if you find yourself, you know, repeating your instructions to your child over and over, and they do the same thing every time, they just ignore you, or they have a behavior or a meltdown, typically this will be a learned behavior that they've learned over time. And so, you know, our kiddos aren't being naughty or having meltdowns on purpose. There's a reason for it. There's something underlying that we have to figure out.
I love that you brought that up, because I love using the quote, kids will do well if they can. Like you said, they are designed to inherently please us. They're designed to learn. They're designed to grow and to develop. And it's our job as the adult to help them learn how to do that as easily and as fluidly as possible.
There's a couple of things that can happen when a child is provided with too many cues and they're not successfully completing whatever it is they're being asked to do. So there's a couple of things that might happen if a child is provided with too many cues for a task. First, they might develop poor self-confidence in their abilities to complete tasks independently, and this will result in the child relying on others to do things that they could potentially be able to do.
They might also develop poor problem-solving skills due to an adult problem-solving for them. So if they don't learn to problem-solve on their own, they're never going to learn, or it's going to take them a lot longer to learn those skills.
They may never develop the ability to filter auditory information. Instead, they'll just shut down when they receive too much auditory information instead of filtering through it.
This is a big one, you guys. They might not develop praxis to its fullest potential. So they're going to continue to struggle with being able to create their own ideas, motor plan the actions, and execute their motor plan. So when a child is told what to do all the time, as well as how to do it, they won't learn those independent skills required for successfully completing a task.
Some other things that might happen in these situations is that you, the adult, might terminate the task because it's proving to be too difficult. It's not working the way that you want it to work, even though it might just be that the child needs more time to process the instructions.
And also, you, the adult, might get frustrated because you've been giving cues over and over and over again, and your child has not followed through. So you're like, what the heck, kid? Why aren't you listening to me?
And then not only is the child having a meltdown, but then you're going to be frustrated and have a potential meltdown. And it's just not a happy situation. The last thing that might happen in these situations is that you end up doing the task for the child, which, like I mentioned before, that these behaviors can be learned. The child may learn over time that if they have a certain behavior, that they don't have to do the task because the adult will do it for them.
Exactly. So, I mean, a quick example would be cleaning up. If the adult asks the child to clean up 17 times and the child doesn't do it, then the adult's going to get frustrated, the child's going to get frustrated, and guess what's going to happen? The adult is going to ultimately clean up the task.
Yeah. And then the child, children are smart. They're going to learn, oh, if I just don't do it, or if I scream and run away, if I cry, if I ignore, then the adult's going to do this for me and I don't have to do it. It does become a learned behavior over time.
I like to call it learned helplessness.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, like we've said in other podcast episodes, we are not blaming anyone. We don't want anyone to feel guilty if they are realizing that this applies to them. It applies to all of us mm-hmm. at some point or another. We all have our moments where we're just like, fine, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
You know? So we all have our moments. But the idea there is to be aware of it and to be able to use these strategies to change it.
Exactly. These are just areas of experience that we've had that we are very passionate about. And we want our families and our clients and all of you guys listening to feel that passion coming from us, because our ultimate goal is to help the child, to help their family be as successful as possible.
So on that note, let's talk about why you're all here, which is our favorite tips, tricks, and strategies to help you and your child become more successful when these situations happen.
Okay, so the first thing that we're going to recommend is to avoid certain words or terms when you are providing your child with verbal cues. Just make sure that you guys are keeping track of these verbal cues that you do give and avoid these certain ones if at all possible.
So the first one is no.
Another one is saying not like that.
Saying that's not right. Or, that's wrong.
Also telling them to don't do that.
Avoid telling the exact steps for what needs to be done.
Another one is saying stop.
Another one is wait.
Or wait. Mm-hmm. I hear that one a lot.
Yes.
Another one is asking the child to watch me or look at me.
And then the final one is saying, hey, and then the child's name, saying their name over and over. So, for example, I'll use my son as an example. If I were cueing him for something and I would say, Logan, Logan, do this. Logan, hey, Logan, hey, Logan, pay attention. Logan, Logan. Eventually, he's going to tune me out the mm-hmm. more that I repeat myself.
And we want to make sure that you guys understand that we're not saying don't use these words ever. But typically in these situations when we're over cueing a child, we're using these words over and over and over again. Hey, look at me. Johnny, look at me. Johnny, hey, watch me.
Hey, stop. Hey, don't do it that way. Hey, you're doing it wrong.
Stop.
Yes.
Things like that. So repeating these words over and over and over again is what you want to try to avoid if possible.
So instead, try saying some of these words. Oh, that was a good try.
It makes a big difference, you guys. Your tone of voice, it definitely helped. Okay, another one is, that was a great effort.
Try saying, oh, oops.
Asking them, hey, can I try it with you?
You can also try asking questions that lead to the correct answer. So this is where you're going to really facilitate problem solving. So you can say, what else can you try? What's another option?
This is a great one if your kiddo says, I can't do it or I don't know how. Instead of giving them the steps to do it, you can teach them instead of telling them. That's a great strategy to help these kids work through these challenges.
Yeah, so providing them with two options to choose from. So, for example, if your child is struggling to get the vacuum cleaner out of the closet and they keep saying, I can't do it, it's stuck. Well, instead of telling them, you need to move the box out of the way, you could give them some options and say, well, do you need to open the door more or do you need to move something? And then they can look at the situation and then ideally they will see like, oh, the box is in the way and they can figure that out.
And that's a great way to grade up to asking them, hey, what else can you try? So if they're not quite at that level of independently identifying the solution to the problem, then giving them those two options is a great way to get them there.
And again, you know, like we said in the very, very beginning, the hack is ultimately silence. Mm-hmm. So giving your kiddo time to process the things you're saying and the questions you're asking them to help them problem solve is going to be really helpful as well.
Yeah, so if your child says, I can't do it, and you don't respond, what are they going to do?
Well, they're probably either going to just give up and walk away, or maybe they'll try something else, or maybe they'll ask you a question. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, then you just kind of work from there. Okay. Some other things you can say, hey, you did it. You tried your best. You did it. Even if it wasn't done exactly how you asked or exactly how it should be, we as adults are going to work on our flexible thinking yes. in order to help our kids feel successful.
I love it. Now, another important thing to remember is to allow for mistakes. You guys, your kids have to make mistakes in order to learn and in order to grow and develop. So this provides an opportunity to pick themselves back up after an imperfect try.
Right. I'm going to stop you guys really quick and ask you how many times you've tried something new and done it perfectly the first time.
I do it all the time. I'm just kidding.
Of course you do. Of course she does, you guys.
Just kidding.
The answer is probably never, right? The first time that we try something, we tend to make mistakes. And if somebody comes in and fixes it for us, we're never going to learn from those mistakes. And the same goes for our children. They do have to learn from their mistakes in order to be able to do it better next time.
Absolutely. It not only allows for the opportunity to improve problem-solving skills, but it also facilitates praxis. And we've talked about this before. We have an episode dedicated to all things praxis, but if you haven't listened to it, praxis is just the ability to come up with an idea, create a plan, and execute it.
And the other thing is it's really going to build that self-confidence. If your child makes a mistake and they problem solve through it, maybe you're helping them and they feel successful by the end of what was considered a mistake or a failure, they are going to build that self-confidence so that the next time the situation occurs and they make a mistake, they're going to have that self-confidence of, well, I've been here before. I've made mistakes before and I figured it out, so I can do it again.
Mm-hmm. You guys, I have to say this. Stop aiming for perfection. Childhood is not about being perfect or even anywhere near perfection.
Life. Let's just say life yeah. is not about being perfect, but especially kids.
It's all about learning and growing and making mistakes. And I don't know, just think back to your childhood and think about all the mistakes you made and all of the things that you've learned along the way. And we want that for our kids, but we also want them to be safe. And so we got to find that happy medium.
Another one of our strategies is to use more nonverbal communication. In preparing for this episode, we actually found a research study, and we will link it in the show notes, that talks about nonverbal communication being a highly reliable form of communication.
Mm-hmm. So it reveals the intention of the message, and it reflects the emotions of the sender better than you can verbally.
And if you think about nonverbal communication, when we think about facial expressions and body language, you know, I'm just thinking of infants and how we make faces at our infants and we cuddle them and we sit next to them. We're using all those different nonverbal communication skills, and infants learn through that. Infants will imitate facial expressions and they learn how that communication works. And it's the same thing, you know, as they get older, that these nonverbal ways of communicating are highly effective and very powerful.
Yeah. So here's an example we'd like to share. Using your facial expressions to communicate, instead of saying stop, try looking confused or concerned and see how your child responds when they see that your expression has changed. That gives them an opportunity to read your nonverbal body language and maybe respond appropriately, change what they're doing, or ask you a question.
Absolutely. And then when you are communicating with your child, when you are giving them a verbal cue, make sure you have eye contact with them. Make sure they're looking near you before you give them the instruction. Even get down on their level. Chances are you're taller than the kiddo you're with. So kneel down and get on their level so that they don't feel like you're towering over them.
One more thing that we'd like you guys to try is to practice having a calm body when providing these verbal cues. These kids will feed off of your energy, and we so often tell our kids to have a calm body But what's the point of telling our kids to have a calm body if we don't even have a calm body when we're doing activities or when we're providing verbal cues?
Yeah.
So use that to model what you want your child to do. So if you want your child to be calm, then show them what it looks like to be calm. If you want them to be crazy and energetic, then get crazy and energetic.
Yes.
So modeling those behaviors, that's key.
I will say, too, that because nobody's perfect and no situation is perfect, these moments of frustration and challenge are really great opportunities to model your own self-regulation tools to your child. So if you're asking them to do something and it's not working and you're starting to get frustrated, communicate that and let your kiddo know, hey, look, I'm getting really frustrated with this situation. Don't say you're getting frustrated with them because that's going to imply that they're doing something wrong. Right? To say, I'm getting really frustrated with this situation, and then continue to communicate about how you are going to take a break or you're going to take some deep breaths so that you can feel calm again. A great opportunity to model that emotional intelligence and self-regulation.
Love that. All right, you guys. So let's give you a few more strategies and activities to try the next time that you ask your child to do something. This is what we recommend. First thing is give them one instruction at a time.
Oftentimes, if you give an instruction that has 3 to 4 steps to it, your child might have a challenge with that sequencing and that memory component. So break it down and give them one instruction at a time.
Also allow for at least 30 seconds of silence before you speak again. And this feels awkward, but that's okay.
It really does give your child the time to process what you said, to process what they need to do about what you said. And if after that silence, your child does not respond or they don't take action, try asking them a question like, hey, what do you do now or what's next?
So before you tell them what is next, wait for them to ask you to either repeat the instructions again or tell you, I didn't hear you or I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes kids will use the phrase, I forgot, when they didn't process or hear the instructions. So we like to tell them something like, try your best to remember or visualize what I said. I know it's in there. That way, they aren't learning to use poor memory as an excuse for not listening or not processing what's being said.
I hear this one a lot from my kiddos. Mm-hmm. Yes.
My son likes to use that one on me a lot, too.
Like this morning, he said, I didn't see the plant on the stair that right. I was throwing the ball at.
Which, you know, he might not have seen it, but it was kind of an excuse.
Yeah.
You know, because mm-hmm. he probably did see it, but maybe he didn't plan on what could happen.
Exactly. You
know? But again, this is how kids learn. So it's something along the lines of, oh, okay, well, you didn't see the plant. Well, now you know it's there. Move it and clean up the mess.
Yeah.
He didn't get in trouble.
No.
He just had to take care of it.
And he did. It was great.
Okay, back to business.
So before you give them an instruction, remind your child to turn on their whole body listening. And we do love the book Whole Body Listening Larry for our little kiddos. It's a great book. But make sure that you're cueing them or you're reminding them to turn on that whole body listening. And you might need to add visuals, demonstrations, any of that extra visual input while you're giving the instructions, if it's applicable.
You can also try using a multi-sensory approach when giving instructions or cues to complete a task. You can allow your child to be participating in movement while you're giving them instructions.
Or you could give them the instructions to the tune of a song.
Or to the beats of a metronome.
Mm-hmm. Make sure that you're using your nonverbal communication skills like we talked about, such as a calm, neutral, or confused facial expression.
If your child is struggling to recall what you said, provide one instruction at a time and have your child repeat it back to you.
Ask if your child wants you to do it with them. Sometimes they'll say, yeah, do it with me. Sometimes they'll say, no, I can do it. But instead of saying, can I show you? ask to do it with them.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, this is really, really beneficial if you're, you know, doing an activity and your kiddo's supposed to do a part of it and they're struggling with it and you say, hey, can I do this with you? Oftentimes, the kiddo's going to be like, no, I got this. And they'll try again.
Mm-hmm. All right. One more thing.
I think this is the biggest one.
This is the takeaway.
This is the big takeaway.
If your child is struggling, if your child is frustrated, if they want to give up, do not do the activity for them.
Give them a break. If they're frustrated and struggling, let them take a break and then come back when they're more calm and finish it then.
Mm-hmm. Just remember that silence is golden.
Yep. Give them time to process instructions and allow them to express their feelings. Suggest and model I feel statements. So I feel frustrated. I feel mad.
And make sure that they know that it's okay to feel mad. You know, it's okay if you're frustrated. I was frustrated too when I was first learning how to do jumping jacks.
Mm-hmm. And then, it's a great opportunity to work on those self-regulation tools. If you feel frustrated right now, what can you do? And you help them through that process.
Yeah, just make sure that you're allowing them time to problem solve. It sometimes just takes a few quiet minutes to think and to process through, and then they'll have it. But other times it takes multiple attempts of practicing and practicing over and over and over again before they get the same skill.
Think of it this way. If you are sitting at the computer and you are typing a sentence and someone next to you is talking to you at the same time and they're trying to tell you something that they feel is important and so they keep repeating it over and over and you're trying to type the sentence on your computer, chances are you're not going to be able to do both things at the same time. So oftentimes if a child is focused on something and they're trying to problem solve through a situation and you're still talking to them, they're not going to be able to problem solve and listen to you at the same time. So just give them that silence to problem solve in their own head.
Absolutely. And the last thing is, if your child asks for help, guys, it's okay to help them. We're not saying don't.
We're not saying just leave them out there.
But just keep it at helping them and don't move into doing it for them.
There it is.
Okay.
That was it. We got nothing else for you.
I could talk about that all day long.
Man, it is just such an important, challenging skill as an adult, you know, working with children, but also having a kiddo of my own, to learn that kids are the same as us. They're just smaller and they need the same things that we need. Sometimes they need silence. Sometimes they need a little bit of help or a little bit of prompting to find the answer. But sometimes all they need is just time.
Mm-hmm. All right, you guys, just keep in mind that we are here for you. We are very passionate about this topic. Sometimes it just takes a little wake-up call, a little nudge, a little push in the right direction to remind you that, or even to help you understand, oh my gosh, I totally do that to my kiddo. I'm going to make a change.
Yeah.
Might not even realize that we're doing it most of the time.
Yeah.
I don't think we do.
No, we don't. Like, there's times when I catch myself and I'm like, oh, it's time for you to stop talking. I have to remind myself, like, okay, you've talked enough. It's someone else's turn. All right, you guys, let us know what you thought of this episode. Loved it, hated it.
If you're going to implement these strategies, make sure that you share your thoughts with us on social media. We love hearing how these are helpful strategies. You can tag us on Instagram at The Sensory Project Show. And if you have a minute to leave us a review on iTunes, we would greatly appreciate that.
Oh my gosh, it's the best.
It is. You guys are awesome. We're so grateful to be able to chat in your ear.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.